Well, no, I'm delighted to be talking to Mick Murphy again, the Iron Man. Mick, the Ross stage end in Castle Island, no better place. Great history of cyclists in Castle Island.
It's about time they've done it again, because Castle Island got an awful lot of honour from the Ross back in my time. And they should be, get, if they had been more involved, I'd have won three Rosses.
Why so? Why is that?
Because the crowd that was following me were pathetic. Just a minute, they're nothing. And it was from Ned Buck took over as our driver. I should say that there was something in him that he was, he had a sixth sense. He knew when we were in trouble and he was there.
What memories have you? How did you get involved with Castle Island Cycling, Mick?
I was thrown to the Kingdom Club, not the Three Club. Because
you were thrown out, why?
Because they said, I wasn't a good team and that I didn't help him beat Tralee CC. But I had awful pride in being in Tralee. I didn't care. Tralee CC in the Kingdom, who won it? And they told me, we don't want any more. I said, fair enough, don't worry about it. Now I was freelancing. And in Castle Island, there was a crowd of athletes. Ronnie Bruston, I wish he was here tonight. His brother, Tom Brennan, Roger Rahilly, Arthur McMahon, and the great man himself up in the mountain, the Waythrower McMahon. He was the faith healer in England for years, remember? And now, they were a young bunch of lads. Do you get me? No big deal at all. Now, if we say anything like this, they'd say, did they have £1 million? Oh, shit. That time, the best, in Tarbert was going to be held, the competition for the best athletic and cycling club in Kerry.
But you were still living down in Kerry.
But I was freelancing up here. Did you get me? I was known.
That's what I'm asking you, yeah.
And before the championship came up in Tarbert, they were ashamed to be seen training here. They put a bit of the chairman around there, togs and jerseys, going up to the field. They were young lads, you know, young lads. Both were on the 20 mark. And now we went out to Tarbert and we beat Kenzo O'Reilly's. All of a sudden, it was a massive, the Castle Island was on the map. And next week, and every week, they were up to the football field with their sporting their like a fight at Castle Island. Proud to be seeing it.
Who was your club when you were cycling in the Rosses, Mick?
Castle Island.
Yeah. And did they support you well? And what did it mean to you?
Look,
to be...
If Castle Island, the trouble would, I'd have won three Rosses and three Ross moons if Castle Island was involved more. Get me? Because money was scarce, but Ned Buck was a great driver and they knew more about cycling because now with me and Donna Heron, we were the strongest club now in Kerry. And if Castle Island was more involved earlier on, do you get me? I'd have won three Rosses.
Is this your first time back in Castle Island for a while now? You're here tonight. The lads are promoting the Ross. There's an stage coming up here. Do you visit Castle Island regular now?
Now and again. No, but same along was away. But for the scene coming in tonight, this man here, Kieran Murray, he's from living in that island. He's actually from Leash. And you ever hear the great Leash cyclist, Ollie Dinnigan? He had the world title. He was the first man to break under 25 miles to an hour in the world. He's from the same place. And what's the question you asked me now?
I was asking about how important Castle Island were to you.
Awful important. Because Castle Island, I'd never have won the roster for being Castle Island. Ned Burke, I should stay in his house. And he was a great man to follow the race.
How good was Danny Hearn?
Danny Hearn was a great rider. And he was a young rider again. He raced for Common Bike, same as I did.
Would the late Johnny Drum have come after you, Mick?
So I got Johnny Drum cycling. I was working Neely Hordens, outside the town. And the reason I left Neely Hordens, I was ashamed after doing it. I didn't have a gym. I needed a gym. And Johnny Drum was the next door neighbour. And he came across to me, talking to me. And he came training with me, the first man to get him. And I met him after in London, because we are the immigrant. And we had a job for him to carry the hardest, the boxes out, up the leather with bricks. And we begged him to stay and get fit, count and go back and win. And if he'd stayed with us, he got home, he went home, he'd be alive today. But he was a great rider.
Sadly, Latimerson.
He beat me in a race in Castleline in 1960.
Well, it is the first time I heard you talking about a man that beat you, because any time we were talking, you would have to beat everybody, which is a great thing. Well done. Now, wait a minute.
Up now. It was the last day that I cycled in Kerry. I worked with a farmer back my way, and the amount of work I'd done, John Peter Curran. He'd race horse, and I should train his race horse. I'd train the horse. And it was a great jockey. The circus people had taught me jockey. But I couldn't wear with a saddle, bareback. I was a Cossack, that's what told me to ride, Cossack style.
Yeah.
I could ride around the ring, the circus, standing up on the horse. And the amount of work I'd done making the cocks away for John Peter, I got 18 shillings. And Castleline Sports was on. I cycled Castleline and stepped around the ring, the circus, standing up on the horse. And the amount of work I'd done making the cocks away for John Peter, I got 18 shillings. And Castleline Sports was on. I cycled Castleline and stepped to Hairbaron. And now Jackie Connor and who was the other guy, they started the modern... Edward Castleline and Lettigan Cycling Club. They completed a cycling club. And they asked me to go on a race in the morning before the sports, two rounds across Scott again.
So
get up now. And I don't know, I won it by about 67 minutes. I went into the track that evening and I got second in seven races. I was, you know, and the first race I lost to Johnny Drum. And I got five more seconds. And I got a prize of winning the race around 2 hours, around the class again, it was 46 miles. I joined the fast time. And I sold the prizes. And Joe bought two of them, Paddy Bet Shannon of Curra.
Latimer Sinem. Now, I want you to tell me now, first, Mick, about one of the most famous stages you ever rode, and that had been many people. The day that you borrowed the ordinary bike. Bring us back to the start of that stage, where you were leading in the race, and how it came about that you had to borrow a bike off of a farmer. So bring us back to the start of that stage.
They said in
where was it?
Just a minute now. They said it a couple of years ago. Warham said, they said in Kerry Radio, that I was unmanageable. In the year I was unmanageable. Well, now, in the race, three times they came down, there was no car behind me. Castleine hadn't come in to find the race at all now. Ned Brook hadn't come in. And now, three times they came down, there was no car behind me. I was in the yellow jersey, and we were coming in through Waterglass Hill from Kilkenny, heading for Clanakilty. And I attacked in the bottom of the mountain. I was now leading the King of the Mountains. I attacked on the Tipperary side of Waterglass Hill, and I gained a big lead. And I looked behind, and I could see two riders leaving the bunch. Tom Ryan to Prairie and Ronnie Williams to Dublin. And they got me in the top and edged me out. Beat me into third place. So now I was still second in King of the Mountains. And across the top, I attacked three times across the bit of a top, because the Shawley girls, they're to feed me. When I was working, I was a refugee, I was out of home. When I was living in Cork. And they used to give me food for having the money, and they used to pay back with my circus tax for another money. And they told me to try and lead through Cork. I attacked three times, and the last man I passed was his son won the Ross Moon last year, Dick Barry. And he fired his drinking bottle at me, not vicious, but and it was gone for Cork. Halfway down Waterglass Hill in the Glenmire side, my free field went. I ran about 2 miles, pushing my beautiful bike. It was a second-hand banger, 10 years old, but running with it and walking with it, running with it. And out to the farm in Glenmire Village came a herd of cows up in front. A bit later, I was getting near them, a farmer, two cows and a farmer after them, and a big set of high nellies, a girl's bike, an old common bike. I sprinted, jumped. I remember leaving my own bike down so gentle. It was precious. I was on the bike, and the bike was gone before I knew what was happening. I was heading for Clonakilty. And it wasn't, there was one, and it was the big size saddle for me. And I was confident I was going to catch a bunch of the common bike. And after just before Cork, the team car came up and gave me a bike. Because Paddy Moriarty and Liam Brick and them, and the story was, they seen a farmer holding my bike. And he phoned the police, and the police were with him. And from there, told the police that the police involved him as well. I think he was, there was a sanatorium in Galmire that time. He was buying cattle. And the story came out in one of the papers. I was chased through Cork by a farmer and a priest. And the police. And the priest. And they gave me my bike. And they let me go like every sheep. No bit of food or nothing. Just gave me and I headed now. I was going through Cork. And I was scared that it would go astray. And going through Cork out towards Bandon. There's a hill out there. And now the Charlemen were there, the horse, they see me coming. And they even let the mud must have gone through that I was in trouble. And they had common bikes, getting bikes along the way from me. And they were shrieking. I rode into West Cork. I'd like to know now how high that hill is. And when I got to the hill, the bottom of the hill, the last four were going over the top. I was the hill behind. And now I took up the chase. And I was feeling bad. But I could hear the wind was bringing the Charlie women, they were shrieking. I could hear that, and it revived me. And I rode solid up the mountain from there to Galmarkilty. I was riding, I could see the viaduct now, 45 miles. And I joined them going to Galmarkilty through the streets. And another half a mile off, I'd have won the stage. I'd saved the day.
Great story.
That night they called me the Iron Man.
Tell us the story about coming into Tralee and being brought into hospital and you jumped out the window. Why did you do that and what happened? And that you were helped on the bike the following morning by Dr. Eamon O'Sullivan.
Now, the next day now after Clonakilty. The next day after Clonakilty, it was from Clonakilty to Tralee. I can't remember much of the first part. We came to Glengariff, but I was in contention. We came to Glengariff, and you turned left into the county bounds up to Glengariff. And there was a break on. A few riders got, because I was, there was a prime of the deciding the top of the county bounds for the King of the Mountains. And I was second place now. And I won first away out of a break. Dylan Hedden was gone, and there was Tom Ryan to pray and a few more. They had gone, and now we came. You come out again, Gareth. Not a big hill, a climb. Not a big, about a maybe a mile, and down into a bridge. And now I got Dylan Hedden, and I was roaring down, and Dylan Hedden roared me, don't break, because the brake was slippy. I braked, and I fought the bike for 100 yards. It was skidding, and skidding. And I was down. I remember getting up and looking into space. And Mangan had came up, and he hit me, and he said, get on that bike. He said, get on that bike. He gave me the bike. But the thing was, the team car should have been with me in the yellow jersey. Do you get me? And now we were down into the bridge. I said I hit the bridge over and through, where I took an awful bang. And I went after the guys up the tunnel road. You come down to the bridge and you go up again. And I almost got him. But I still blame that for the... I lost the King of the Mountains over that. And to this day, I regret it. Now, into the county bounds, and the next thing I remember was going through the bridge into Kinmare. All the riders were looking at me. I was all blood. The team came up and gave me a sponge, and now we came into Mullet's Gap from Kinmare side, climbing up to Ladies' View. Yeah. And I controlled the race up there. I knew there was something wrong with me. And I tried going to Kinmare to lift my hand up, and in Castlevine, Mars Fitz's uncle, he broke his dislocated collarbone, and they asked him to lift his arm. He couldn't. I knew there was something wrong. And I controlled the race and come near the top. She must have been her own attack.
Were you in pain?
No, I wasn't in pain, no. But, you know, but I was feeling rough. And of course I was in pain. But you know, I was going so hard that the pain in my legs was more. And all of a sudden, Seamus Devlin took us out. And I wrote to the others, trying to leave him go. It wasn't my business, you know. That's how cheeky I was. And down the mountain, I knew I was in trouble. And I decided now I was going to be attacked. And into Killarney, and I went through Killarney on my own.
I was standing on the side of the street in Killarney that day watching you.
And I decided, now out of Killarney, now I caught him at the Grotto, not the Grotto?
Yeah.
And the Dublin men attacked in waves, the whole team. They attacked in waves to get me out. And of the attack they made, I counterattacked. All the way into Ballyseedy, the and I knew I had saved the day, and I stayed up on the bike. But the thing was, there was talks that time. I said it in the program about the body snatchers in London, that anybody that went into in the 17th century, you had a buck on your hair. There was more. That was the biggest injustice. I was selling, if you died in good shape at all, you were sold to the medical schools. And there was talk that anybody went into the Harrow Road Hospital, the Harrow Road, St Mary's, he never came out. He was sold. You get me? And some of the, I was told going the race to be careful, that if I crashed, that I'd be sold. Just a minute. So now they took me up to the hospital.
Wait a minute. Where did you finish in the stage, Mick? And how did you... You must have been in bad shape. Tell us
how
bad
you were. I roared in. The amount of text I counted everything. I couldn't believe to this day. I wake up. I'm on never goes now. But I wake up in the middle of the night roaring. My race comes back to me. The awful things I done. It was a savage battle all the ways. I went with every attack the Dublin men gave. They attacked in waves.
Did the pain of the shoulder hit you then when you finished?
Just a minute. No, you see, in cycling, the pain of the cycle is more severe than it.
Yeah, but when you finished the stage?
When I finished the stage, now they took me up to the Bonsecours. Is it the Bonsecours?
No, it's Tralee General.
No, not now. That's now. But that's
Bonsecours still there, yeah.
And I was scared now when I heard that... The body, and the government, some of them, I think, was the William, they were saying, oh, he's forgetting he's fit now only for the body snatchers. But there was rumours going around, they were selling, the body snatchers were going back again. They were selling, if you died in good shape, because of the American president, he was sold to the body.
But sure, that wasn't happening here in Kerry, Mick.
But I didn't know, to get me? But it was, because I don't forget, I did crashes. Yeah. And they still talk about that I crashed in Parkland Silla. It was in training, I crashed, did you get me?
Anyway, when you landed in the hospital, were you x-rayed or what? Was the collarbone broken?
They went, the collarbone was dislocated. An awful sore thing. It's still up, they never go back.
Yeah.
And a lot of footballers get them. And now they put me on the x-ray table.
Right.
And I suppose that was concourse. The truth about it, I was halcinating about body snatchers. I thought it was... Ready for the...
You were concussed, of course.
I was concussed. Yeah. And they put me on the x-ray table. And to get me up, fortunate, they caught me by the sore shoulder. And I roared and kicked and attacked him. And lay down on the floor. You know, they knocked me down the floor to get me up. And now, to get me up, they decided that they got a big bag to put me into and lift me up. And now I thought I was for the high jump. I was for the medical.
You were hallucinating.
Yes, I was. I was going to. They were selling me.
Yeah.
And I fought and kicked at him. And the nurses, they were nurses that time. And they were on my side, and the nurses were on the other side, and I was fighting, and they were holding. And all of a sudden, I see a big window opened. And I ran for the window. I was saying, he won't sell me, bitch. I was roaring at him. He won't get me. And There was a wall about 3 foot high in the bottom of the window, and I leapt over that. I think Bob Chisholm went higher when he won the gold medal for Ireland in the mid hurdles, out into the yard, and they went out the window, and they went out the door, and they caught me outside, and made me sign a book.
Discharging yourself.
Discharging myself. And who was up the road a bit, never came in, was Paddy Callan and Dr. Eamon. And Dr. Eamon had a bit of rope in his hand, I suppose, for tying the bikes in the top. And God almighty, I thought, you know, I've escaped. I thought, now they're for me. And I do not, I detour around him.
Of course, Eamon was in charge of the mental hospital in Killarney.
I know. And I thought, I knew that as well, so now I was afraid.
Now, come here, mate. That night, now, hold on a minute. That night with the shoulder now.
Listen to me now. But no, I don't. The kind of animal I am. I went around him and ran from the town. I went in and went to the dance that night. But maybe that same, it kept me lively.
Had you tied up?
Nothing at all.
But there's a photograph the following day you're getting a new bike and your arm is all strapped. You could hardly.
Did they put a sling? Maybe a sling.
Yeah.
But anyway, I went to the dance, went back, and next morning I got up, I was fit for the grave. I thought I was going to die. And me and Donna hadn't walked downtown, I went to the shop. And the woman said, "Are you sick? You look sick. What's the matter?" I said, "I'm fit for the grave." Tried it, she said, and she got a bottle of loose water and threw it to me. And I'm not much of a believer on this day, I believe I never started. And now I got up to the start was on. And they helped me on the bike. They said, "In my shoes, my shoes." They lifted me up and they pushed me off. And I went off like a rocket. Left the others far behind, heading for Nina. They caught me 3/4 of the way up Kettle Island Mountain. After dislocated collarbone. And go on, so I dropped back in some short hill. A man came back, he said, "Are you in trouble?" I said, "No, keep going away." And I finished high up into Nina. And the next day was Nina into Castlebar.
Were you taking pain-killing tablets or anything?
Nothing. See, there should have no Dr. Fulling or nothing. Only Dr. Hamill, he was, I think, Dr. Hamill, he was used to the... See, it was your Dr. Eamon, your Paddy Callan, he was head nurse in the nurse house. So it was two mad fellas. The other mad fellas. But you were there.
I spent 38 years there myself.
You were the lookout. If that even came, they took you out in bad shape. You'd have him off too. You'd sell him.
And come here, you finished out the race with that shoulder.
But the truth was, I was hallucinating. Do you get me?
You were, yeah. You were
hallucinating. I thought I was.
You were.
But come here, how did you finish up after? Was it badly? How long did before it healed?
It took us 6 months. It's an awful lot thing to happen. Mm-hmm. But it never affected me.
Is it now, Mick?
Now and again, maybe I get it in, but that's my old age. All my life, it never affected me.
What age do you know?
77. Yeah. But the next day, the last day from Sligo into, Castlebar into, but then again, but you know what I'd done? In going to Kilkenny, there I got the jersey. I won the stage in Kilkenny to get the yellow jersey. I asked the people in Kilkenny, was there a gymnasium in the town? And I said there wasn't, but there was a guy called Sid Blewett, he had a big weight, which was too big for me. I rode out into town. This was now with the yellow jersey. I found a ditch, a fence, like many times before that, and picked a stone suitable for lifting, and did an hour and a half weight training. Went across the field and got the blood from the cows and rode into town.
Tell us getting the blood from the cows. Because
and the next day, it's in the paper, Mick Murphy disappeared and done a 40-mile training spin. To cool down.
Tell us about
Tell
us about getting the blood from the cows. How did you do that? And why did you do it?
A guy came back from England, from my place, Hick Connor was the name. He was in America. And he was a boxer in America in the Depression, and in the Depression as well. And he was a good boxer. He said, all the boxers take blood. Because the boxers take blood all over the dig, because when they're hit hard, when they're well fed, they won't go down. If they're badly fed and get hit, they'll go down and stay down. And I'd read in manuals where the Africans of 1,000 years ago, maybe more, they used to tap the cows for blood. And Genghis Khan, Genghis Khan, he was an empire out in that end of the world.
That's right, oh, yeah.
They used to live on horses, horses back. They had no cows on their feet, and the women used to have barns on the horses. And for food got scarce, they used to take the blood from the horses. And if no food came up, they'd kill the horse and eat him. And if no food came up, they drew lots and killed over 9 men and eat him. So they were well fed. Imagine if I got that from their arse, a good fat fellow in the chamber.
So you'll go into the field, you'll cycle out after finishing the stage.
I go into the cows. I did a little bit of a string, and it's spancel them that they can't kick then, they can't move. It's just in the thighs. And the cows at that time, they were used to be milked, they were always friendly. And I did a penknife like the Africans. I read this in a manual how the Africans do it. And there was the Mongolians, the kind I'm telling you about, Genghis Khan's army. And file it down to a knife edge, a smart little thing, stick in the vein, in the next or the heap, and it'll shoot blood into your little bottle. I take about a whiskey tumblerful.
A thimbleful.
Yeah, the frisky glassful.
Yeah.
Not a big drink.
Yeah.
And to stop the blood, you just squeeze the skin, the blood hardens, no problem.
Did you find it doing you good?
Of course. I had a sheen in my face.
You still have it.
You get me? I had a sheen in my eyes because I came out in a book with Mick O'Connell and and Jerome Sheen, all them. And you could see my face. But Tom Dale, in his book, he said I had laughing roguish eyes. Well, to call me a rogue was a crime. I managed to sleep out, do you get me? And walk in Kilsquarry in the demon's land, do you get me? To be a rogue.
But even today, the Olympians, they're blood doping. They're swapping blood even today.
That's all lies. Yeah. The theory of blood doping is, you take it one time back 30 years ago, if an athlete broke a world record, he was in blood doping. They blame the Finns, the greatest runners of all time. That time, do you remember Leslie Veeran, the last one?
Yeah.
And they shot back, they said, we get our oxygen and strength from training in the pine forests of Finland. Now, the theory was, with a stranger took a pint of blood out of your arm or somewhere, put into a pint glass, put into the fridge, and put it back into your vein, 2-3 days later. Yeah. Well, don't think of it.
Yeah.
If you took a pint of blood out of yourself and weakened you for so long and to put it back in, your body wouldn't take it. And that went on to the 1980s, but in the Moscow Olympics, an American athlete went out in the street and asked together for blood. They gave him the blood, he drank it, and he died. Never heard of it again. It's false.
Mick, how do you spend your time now? How are you doing? Do you have a lot of visitors? I know that you're a very popular individual. And how do you spend your day now, and do you have a lot of visitors?
My day, I haven't got time. See, in my cycling days, people in London said to me, how do you live? I was doing training hard and working hard. You see me now? Now, I still train. I walk and steady, because my walk is slow now. I'm more bit up than the average guy because I had awful hard races, do you get me? And I worked hard trained hard in England, and I worked hard.
Did you ever go to a physiotherapist?
Never. Just a minute. Because I was trained by Al Murray of Scotland in my weight training. The Russians copied techniques, my book. He sent me a book called The Real Weightlifter. He was in the Olympic Games. I was a real weightlifter. I used 250 pounds over my head.
You're still weightlifting, aren't you?
I am.
What do you do every day? Tell us.
Just a minute now. I do about 2 hours weight training, but it's not high class weightlifting. Now it's an old man, and I walk for about 2 hours.
Yeah. What kind of a diet would you have? My diet.
My diet. I do have either chicken, I do have mixed, I do have chicken, cheese, sardines, chicken, cheese, sardines, and cheese.
What's so special about that diet, Mick?
Well, it's full of protein, you get me? And then for calcium, the cheese, and I do have fruit, bananas, or dried raisins, and orange juice, cans of orange juice and apple juice, and peanut butter, because peanut butter, there's an awful lot of protein in it, and peanut butter and honey.
Do you sleep well?
I sleep like a log.
Yeah.
And I have no problems, and that keeps me busy, and then I go around the farm.
How did you find the hard winters? We had a couple of very, very hard winters.
I never feel cold.
No?
Because I worked in Germany for 14 years, and for that in Europe is they put on plenty of clothes.
That's the answer.
That's the answer. I wake up in the morning, you know, a guy here interviewed me, you know, and he wrote in a book in England. And the things he said about me was unbelievable, you know. He said, I was an old eccentric, and I slept in a bed, an old pallet. And, oh, he said, I'd go to town now and again. Everything he said was, you know, and he never said anything about the gym I had in the room.
Was all that hurtful, what he said about you?
But I realized he was so backward and ignorant. I mean, he didn't know what the gym was. I mean, that's antique. That's the greatest thing in the world today in my gym. Yes.
Would religion play a big part in your life, Mick? Are you a religious person?
Not anymore, but I was. I was. I was, describe myself, because when I was young, my parents were awful strict. And a lot of, and I guess the neighbours as well, some of them, they'd hound you. They'd say, you're a disgrace to the family, to get me for little things. And my father and mother had hound me. You get me? Not physical now, but you know, to be good and not to insult people and everything. And I grew up thinking I was bad. Do you get me? I think I was bad, and my neighbour then, you know, we were known as mad and bad and evil and everything, you know, because we were in sport. It was, they were thrown over that, throw me out, see? And until I read later, the great man that started, Martin Luther, the reformers, he grew up thinking the same, that he was bad.
But you still go to Mass with your parents when you were young and stuff.
Get up now. And there's a man living now, Floyd Landis. He won the Tour of France 5 years ago in 2006. He's living on the side of a mountain now, in an old hut. His family has left him. They never paid him for the Tour of France, which is not right. And he was, you know, the Amish religion. He's one of them. And he was... he grew up thinking he was bad because so I describe myself now, looking back, I had that fear in me that it was bad.
Where did you lose? You said a while ago there, Mick, that you had a religion one time, you believed in things, and you said you don't know. Where did you lose it?
I call along the way, whenever there was trouble in the mountains, I should say, help me God. You know? Yeah. I should say, oh, tell myself, help me God.
Yeah.
I believed in the... Jim, I got those words from my... But reading things now, but I never lost it. I always believed I would differ the law of averages. I call my religion now, as if you break, if you don't follow the within reason, the laws of, you know, laws, you'll suffer.
Yeah.
You know, it'll happen to you some way. The law of averages. That's
like, you believe in afterlife?
No, because... I don't want to. A priest came in front of me in hospital in Tralee, an African priest, and he was teaching me about God. And I said to him, "Don't come near." I said, "I don't believe in religion at all." I said, "I don't want to go up." I said, "Would you block at all when I die up top?" I said, "I want to go down because it's warmer down there and all my mates are there."
So you don't believe in afterlife. Of course, you'd be buried. We could be all gone before you, of course. There's a lovely graveyard just at the bottom of your garden, isn't there? Your field.
I know how old the church in that.
Talk to us about
800
it.
800 years old, an Norman church.
What's the name of the place?
Sograina.
Yeah.
I think it's the most beautiful church built by the Normans. See the beautiful stonework.
Yeah.
But I was pack made with a guy, he's the undertaker in my town, Fitzpatrick. He worked in Germany. He drank and raved his way through Germany. He played with Kerry Fitzpatrick as well, great as a carpenter. And he was always keep house and queer place in Germany. He was Amsterdam, he was seen. Out of his mind, but he's working 11 hours a day for it.
He's an undertaker now.
Yeah, he's an undertaker now. He's back now, undertaker.
What's the deal you have
I
with him?
Up, I would give him that he'd put me under. I'm paying him by installments to put me under. And that he in the graveyard gate, he'll have two guys with bowler hats and teddy boy shoes. Come back to the old times.
Yeah.
And he'll have in an old bloke that isn't dressed with a bowler hat. He'll even know rednecks.
Should there be no one at your funeral?
I told him that a day and I'll break the contract. And a month ago, he goes into a shop in the town on my banks and he buys ice cream every day. And I met him inside and I said, if you don't buy me two ice cream, I said, I'll break the contract. And he bought me a big box. So I got him.
You listen a lot to radio, do you, Mick? You have no television.
I wouldn't have watched only real film, something with a bit of sense.
Yeah, but sport means a lot to you. Do you listen to a lot of radio,
okay, Kerry? Radio is great.
Yeah.
I listen to you all the time. It's great. And, I was a wrestler in England. A real wrestler. Now, see my ears?
Yeah.
As far as there?
Cauliflower.
Cauliflower ears. Yeah. But a lot of you, I told him tonight, I don't know what happened to him. In London, I used to be robbing women's handbags. And one night, three women attacked me and to see, and they bit me across the ears, the bitches. And that's what happened to my ears. Well, now that's a joke. Come here. Did you know what happened to my ears? I got cauliflower ears. Boxers get them, rugby players get them, and wrestlers.
What do you think of the state of the country today now? What do you think of the government?
Well, for they've done it right. For they've done it, they've destroyed the young people. For they've done it right. Because will it ever come back? It took awful headbangers to do what they've done. It's not right for them. I don't like to see the young people go. We're back now. What do you think of yourself?
I agree with what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, for they done it right. Because that's the law of average I always followed. That if you go against the law of averages, you're going to suffer.
Who would you admire most now, Mick, and we'd say in Ireland, are there any people you'd admire? Are people in the world? Who would you admire?
Who would I admire now in the world? Well, I wouldn't admire Obama, because his ancestors were slave traders. That's a nice fellow to have. Andrew Merkel. Because Germany is booming. I worked there for 14 years. Plenty of money and plenty of work. You know, things are... There's no big deal in Germany. It's all natural. Yeah. All natural. But for that young to Ireland now is not forgivable.
Have you any regrets in your life, Mick?
No. I've no regrets because my life was awful wicked. And I was, at 10 years old, I was working in the bog with the dunking baskets, taking out turf from the bogs. 10 years old. And I put myself in the same wavelength as the great Jack Dyle, the singing Irish playboy. He was shivering cold in the Cork Air Crock at 14 years old.
Did you meet him?
I did. A marvellous man.
The gorgeous Gael.
And there's a book, you should read it, get it through the internet. It's wrote by an English author.
I read it about his life, yeah.
He was a marvellous man, wasn't he?
Yeah.
All the things they said about him was all wrong.
Yeah.
He died, I know for he died in London with no shoes in him.
Had you brothers or sisters?
I had a brother, a great athlete, and he ran away from home. See, I told you I was hounded by my parents, not physically, but scolded, to the same way that Martin Luther thought he was bad, and Friedlander thought he was bad. His parents were hounding because they were Amish religion, and I put myself in the same class as them.
So what became of your brother?
He ran away from home, and he joined the Cistercians, cycled there in Waterford. And whatever happened there, he cycled back, and I opened the door by chance after about a year. He was outside, afraid to come in, and he died after.
What age was he when he died, Mick?
He was about 16.
Your parents, it seems so, were very hard on you. What kind of about your mother?
Not physically, do you get me?
No, but
trying to make us... that was the culture of be good, do you get me? Hounding me over, and from the house, they stood at me. I'd run out, up on the hill, I'd down and sleep with the cows. I thought it was bad. But he done me a favour that I wouldn't have the willpower to do what I'd done before that.
And who was your mother? Where was she from?
A great, great woman.
What was her name?
Bridie Connell, her name was O'Connell. And she was a great, great... There was always food on the table, but food was scarce at times. There was always food on the table, and she just sore clothes. And one time she told me, I got hurt boxing, and my pillow was all... But the boxing, people said we were mugs again, me and my mates. We were trained by Willie Lennon of Dublin. He was fifth in the Olympic Games for Ireland. So everything I'd done, I had good coaching, and everything I'd done was... My coaching systems were great.
What did your dad do for how did he earn the few bob?
The farm was a poor farm.
Behind the house?
All around the house there, you know, a hill farm. And things were awful hard. And I never, and my brother, we never started doing anything with my parents physically. But they used to, you know, but it was the way of life that him. Not to bring disgrace on the family, you know.
Were you reared in the house that you're living in, Omic? And did your dad build that house?
Until I was 6 years old. I was there in the old house.
That the house you're in now?
No, a little ruin down there, a stone ruin, 150 yards away from it. And the hens were to sleep inside in the house. That's him. The beautiful hen.
Yeah.
Come in, there was a hole in the door, and they'd say... And start singing for you, as a lady said. It was beautiful. And when I was 6 years old, we moved up to the other house. And I remember when we moved in, the war was on. My father saying, the war is on. That's the first thing I remember. And me and my mates, then we were about 15 years old, 16. We started a boxing club in the old house. And we hit each other hard. And people said we were mugs. But we were saying we lived in a double. So I was a real boxer.
What schooling had you?
I went to Cork School, and I only went there when I was 7 years old.
To where?
Cork School. It's a mile up the road.
Yeah.
And the road there was called the Alley. There was an old alley. Mm-hmm. People have forgotten about these things now. In a quarry there.
The Handball Alley.
A Handball Alley. And there was an alley in Castlevine as well. See, people now, they've forgotten their old culture. Mm-hmm. And... I only went for about 3 years to school, 3 or 4 months a year. And the first day, but my athletic career started there. When I was there, 7 years old, there was a guy called Tyke Denny. He had a pub in the town, the Skellig's Rock in Castlevine. I was 7, he was about maybe 12. And that time down south, there was a type of wrestling. Now, knowing being a wrestler, I know it was called Greco-Roman. It's held in the Olympic Games. And it was a big thing around that time. And he lined us up. You know, we were from 7 years old to 10, maybe. And we all had to wrestle him. But 10 was... he wouldn't hurt us.
What age were you when you left school?
Yes, I mean, now, he was the man that... I still talk about him. The man that started my athletic career.
What age were you then when you left school, Mick?
About, I suppose, 11 years old. They put me work in the bogs. At 10 years old, they should put me up on the donkey's back and go 2 miles to come in the bogs and work all day. Maybe it was 11 years old now. 8 or 6, following a donkey in basket.
Would you like if your life had taken a different turn and if you had continued on at school and maybe went into school in Castlevania after Mick, would you have liked to have got a better education? Not that there's anything wrong with your education now, but would you have liked to have gone on and educated yourself more?
No, because my mother taught me to read and write, and that was the key to my athletic career. Do you get me? She taught me. And I'd never have done the things I'd done. Did you get me? And then my neighbour, he introduced me to the circus, Duffy's and Farkas and a ragtag circus. And because he was a traveling, there's a traveling showman going around that time. Maybe you see more Seven Killarney. Mm-hmm. Well, Paddy McCarty's Kibbereen, he used to hold the chain. I can do all them. I've photographed them. Leather on my chain. And my 7-year-old, going to my communion, my mother took me back the day before, and he turned me onto a big long leather, 30-foot leather with a rope. I was a 7-year-old kid, and I did on his chin walking around the place.
Did you ever get an opportunity to marry?
I did. But I don't think I ever stayed in the same place long enough. Mm-hmm. One of my girlfriends, one of my beauties, she begged me to take her to Germany with me. And it wouldn't, because a lot of married people took that way and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
Do you get me?
I do, yeah.
So the thing was, I was a travelling.
Were you a drinking man in junior life, Mick? Did you like to? I know that any time I'd go down to Castlevania, I'd meet you, you'd have a few whiskies and things.
Yes.
Did you drink a lot in your life?
I started playing darts in Germany, in England. I beat the British champion, I beat the European champions. I was a top class. I got famous over darts. And Germany won the World Cup in 1986. I was playing darts, and I got famous one night. I beat the British champion, Ray Carnbert, and then I played the European champions from Finland. I beat Bristol and Dacros one time, and I decided I'd go pro. But I was sponsored, I 15,000 in the bank in 1986, a lot of money then. But I was sponsoring myself, and there was nightlife as well, and in 9 months it was gone. So anything I done in life, I would go over the top.
Come here, do you have a lot of callers now? Do you have a lot of visitors? Because there's some, I heard a strong rumour, there's a man comes down from Dublin interviewing you a lot.
Yes, they come down. And you know, I was in the interview now. I want you now to get that programme about, you will?
Body Shukra. Yeah, we will. Get back now. Do you have a lot of callers?
Often, very often. But I talk to all, like here and here, all the tourists. And I say to them, that graveyard, the church is a Norman church.
Yeah.
And I said to the
whose land is that on, Mick's memory?
My land.
It's all that you're
got. I got a bit of value. I got 50 acres of bad land. And the way I say you couldn't eat a cow or a sheep that come out of the South Kerry land. If you did, you wouldn't live long. It's bad land. Set you up now. It's bad land. But it made me. Just a minute now. I said to the Germans and Christ, I said, you're not the first here, I said. The Normans came here 800 years ago. But there was a saint involved in that place. Saint Ronan.
Oh, yeah.
There was Saint involved there.
What was he saint of, Saint Ronan? What's his story?
Well, the thing is, all the saints came back after the Romans were beaten back, same as Saint Patrick, I should believe. And the parish, Filemore Parish, and it's part of Castlevania, inside the hills, Carton Hills, by the Bonestade and Rail, was called Ronan. Up until 60 years ago, when the ESB bills first came out, it was Ronan, named after him. And there's a place in my place called Gumnetswell, you know, in Ballywoone, there's a place there, yeah. And in Inch.
St. Gumnet.
But the truth was, I've checked it out, that the time of Cranville, the well in my place was called Tubber Ronan, the saint, the name of the of the Saint Ronan. Do you get me? But she was down there. She was staying in the St. Green Abbey. There was a big mansion there. The McCarthy's owned it for while I'm going back, the Kings of Munster. And he, one of them had wives, so he wasn't doing bad. But she was there.
So what does life hold for Mick Murphy now, Mick? What, you looking down the line, and do you expect to live to be... Mick Dwyer says he's going to live to be 100. What about yourself?
The thing about I think about dying is, see, you, once you're born, you can die any time. It's a lottery.
Would you have any fear of dying?
No, I have no fear of dying at all. Because, like I said, I don't want to go up with you blokes. I don't want to go up top with you blokes to heaven. I want to go down.
Are you including me in that?
I want to go down because it's warmer down there and all my mates are down there.
Come here, Mick, listen to me. It was always great talking to you. And come here, you're a tonic to be talking. And there's a big crowd watching and listening there and everybody's learning. There's a big crowd of young fellas below at the end of the bar there. And they tell you they're going to take away stories with them and they're going to be telling stories about Mick Murphy, the Ironman. And you're a great advertisement for cycling.
Well, listen,
and I tell you have a man over there taking your photograph all night. I tell you that, and you're well photographed.
That
you're,
man,
you're in book and paper.
That man was he's from County Leash, and he was a mate of the great cyclist Ollie Dunigan. Did. He was the first man to break to go under 25 miles in an hour.
Yeah. Well, Mick, listen to me. Thanks for talking to me, and come here. Look after yourself.
Well, I'm delighted to meet you.
Lovely.
But I want you now. You said you're going to have another program about Buddy.
The same programme will be going out again, Mick.
And you'll be on it?
I'll be just introducing it, and I'm going to get a CD of that for you.